From St. Louis Public Radio, this is St. Louis on the Air. I'm Kate Grumke, in for Elaine Shaw. For the last 20 years, the Missouri River has been the host of a competition unlike any other. It starts in Kansas City. The race's finish line, 340 miles away, is in St. Charles. This race is the MR340, the longest nonstop paddling race in the world. That is the sound of the raucous scene at the start of this year's MR340, which was held over 3 days in July. And among those boaters was a St. Louis Magazine senior editor, Nick Phillips. And Nick is here now in studio. Nick, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Nick, a few weeks ago, St. Louis Magazine published your chronicle of this 340-mile race, the MR340. It's a real test of endurance. You describe it as a, quote, sweaty, maddening hell. That some St. Louisans can't get enough of. For this race, you spent around 74 hours, mostly in a boat with a partner. So tell me, how did you learn about this race and what interested you?
Well, full disclosure, when I heard about this thing many years ago, I did not know that the Missouri River connected Kansas City to St. Louis. So that's how bad my geography was. But I heard about it and it sounded nuts. And so I thought, Then in recent years, I started doing outdoors coverage for St. Louis Magazine. And I thought, well, okay, let me just go observe this thing. So I did. I drove out last year in July, I think it was maybe August, to Kansas City. And I just followed in my car, you know, along the different ramps going east as the race moved east. And I met some of the ground crews, the people who help out the racers, you know, the racers. And so that was interesting. And then in Jeff City, I jumped on one of the safety boats. The organizers let me jump on a safety boat and just observe, you know, fly on the wall. And then I followed them all the way to the finish line. And I get to this finish line and everyone's very emotional and happy. And I'm like, what is this cult of a race? So I was like, I just thought, you know, the only way to understand this thing is to do it. And so that's what brought me to do it this year.
And I'd like to invite you, the listeners, into the conversation. Have you competed in the MR340, or are you thinking of giving it a try and have a question for our guests? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. I'd like to add another voice to this conversation. Steve Schnarr is the race director of the MR340. Steve, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Steve, this race was started in 2006. You came along later through the nonprofit Missouri River Relief, which now runs this race. You've been involved in various parts of the race for almost two decades. It's massive, crossing the entire state. So what is your role as this race is going on?
Well, it's kind of changed over the years. So initially, I was in a safety boat, a motorized boat that went along with all the racers and provide support along the way and all kinds of help. In 2021, our organization, Missouri River Relief, basically took over the MR340 from the original race founder, which is Scott and Kate Mansker. And they are luckily still totally involved in the race, but that changed like my involvement in the race. So now I'm now the race director for the 340, and I'm like on the ground the whole time. So I'm at race start. We have the day before the race, there's a race check-in that kind of lasts all day, and I'm there orchestrating that, and then making sure the race start goes off, and then I zip down to the finish line and start setting up the finish line. I'm part of the safety dispatch team that's, you know, like available to help solve problems for people along the way and then getting that finish line set up. So that's my new role. And my race director role is like all year long. So, you know, we have stuff going on right now for next year's race, of course.
Yeah, I'm sure it takes a lot of planning. So, Steve, could you tell us about the Reaper? It's a big part of this race, part of the competition and safety. So how does the Reaper work?
Sure. Well, the Reaper is one safety boat out of our team of boats that are moving along with the paddlers or stationed along the way. And the Reaper plays a special role. So it moves along at the pace of the cutoff time for the race. So as you go across the state in the MR340, there's 5 checkpoints that you have to meet by a certain cutoff time. So you've just got to get there before the cutoff time. And the Reaper basically has like a spreadsheet with where they need to be every minute of the race, like what mile marker they need to be at. So they're just moving along as this visual reminder that if the Reaper passes you, you've got to pass the Reaper again before you get to that next checkpoint. So it sort of has, I mean, the idea of the Reaper was the race founder, Scott Mansker's idea. And it's a really cool boat that has big glowing eyeballs on its windshield and this giant dragon on the side of the boat. And it's just this spooky, scary, you know, like thing that's lurking through the race that everyone needs to stay in front of.
That sounds scary. Nick, did you fear the Reaper while you were on this race?
We did fear the Reaper, especially on that first day. That's brutal because it's going at a certain miles per hour and you need to beat it to Waverly, which is the first checkpoint. And we beat it by like an hour. And we're like, oh man, is this just going to... But then the Reaper stops and those people sleep. So that gives you like an opportunity to just keep going and get some distance between yourself and the Reaper.
So Nick, tell me about how you prepared for this race. Once you knew you were going to do it this year, what did you do to prepare?
Well, as Steve told me this, I knew this going into it. Heat is a really big problem.
Yeah, and, July. That's really hot.
It was unbelievable. And some year, this was not a terrible year. There have been years that were like just really, really bad. But you know, I work in an office most of the day, so I'm used to AC. I had to go out every day for 3 weeks at the height of the heat of the day and just like exercise for about 60 to 90 minutes just to get my body acclimated and get ready for that. So yeah, heat was a big thing. We also, do you want to know about like boat
stuff?
I mean,
I'm wondering also about training. Like, are you someone that does endurance sporting events like this, or like how did you physically get ready for this?
Well, it was more, we went on the Missouri a few times with Jason and I, who was my teammate. And we practiced tipping over and like getting back in the boat. But as far as physical fitness, I feel like that's a little less important than just being able to stand the heat. And, you know, you got to stay hydrated. You got to eat enough food. That also hurts people.
And you also talked to some other former participants in the race. What advice did you hear from people?
What I just said. So making sure you're not forgetting. See, it's easy to forget to do things. It's like when you're out and you have nothing but time, but like you get kind of in this loopy, sleep-deprived state and you just like forget to sip water. You forget to eat food. So Jason and I would just ask each other, hey, have you had any water lately? Hey, are you hungry? How do you feel? And so that was a big thing to get ready for. And also just making sure, you know, something that's crazy that Steve might want to talk about, but we didn't, they told us, you know, you have to bring warm clothes. And I'm like, why would you need to bring warm clothes? And the reason is that on that river, at night, when it's foggy, it actually gets down pretty low. Like the temperature gets down in the like 60s or whatever, even in July and August.
Oh, wow.
And we were wet. And so I was really cold.
Yeah.
How would you know that if you don't do that all the time?
Yeah. And Steve, in the kind of big crowd sense of this, what are some of the safety concerns that you think about affecting the paddlers, or what might surprise them even?
Well, you know, the race does go all night long, so that is challenging. Paddling at night on the Missouri River is daunting, especially kind of your first time doing it.
And you were in a kayak, so can you kind of describe what that is and what it feels like to be on the water in that type of a boat?
Yeah, Jason and I were in a tandem kayak, so he was in the back, I was in the front, and you're in a cockpit, so we couldn't really see our legs. Jason's in the back, right? He's got his feet on the rudders, and he's steering the boat with his feet. I will be completely honest, it took us a while at the beginning when we were preparing to not feel claustrophobic. You just feel like you're hemmed. You just feel like you're stuck in this thing. And that you want that. Like, you want a tight fit, you know, but you just have to get used to it. Now, there are people in stand-up paddleboards out there. There are people in canoes out there. There are people in these giant, like, you know, 13-14-person canoes and dragon boats.
And are there also barges passing you as you're going down the river?
Yes.
Oh, that sounds scary.
Some of these barges, if they're really heavy and the tow is really heavy, they're kicking up a wake that is, I mean, it could be like 6 feet, 6 feet waves. I mean, they're huge. They can be huge. And you just got to angle yourself in just the right way, like not quite perpendicular, but just slightly off so that you don't get tipped over.
And so, Steve, we heard about kind of the different types of boats. So people can compete in this solo or a team, right? Do you recommend one way or the other to do this race?
You know, there's positives and negatives to both, for sure. And a lot of people will prefer to do this solo, on their own, because you don't have to depend on someone else like following through like every step of the way, right? So most people, like the larger number of people, do this solo. But if you do it as a team and you're with someone that you trust, that you work with well, there's huge benefits to that, because you have you've got a built-in support system, like, in the boat with you, right? Like, you could actually maybe doze off and the other person is in control and paddling, keeping you going downstream. And you can also, like, build off of each other. So if someone's having just kind of a breakdown and they're like, oh, God, I'm done. I'm totally done. You've got someone else to, like, kick you back into gear and, like, you know, rev you up again and get you past that so that you can keep going. It's definitely not a one size fits all. And we have a lot of people that, start out solo or start out tandem and then switch, you know, they try something different later. And we also have people that, you know, they've got a partner, they've got a boat, they're going to do it tandem. And then life happens. And at the last minute, they need to just do it by themselves. You know, their partner can't make it for whatever reason. They find a boat and they just go for it.
And Nick, you did compete with a partner, your former college roommate, Jason Deem. Earlier today, producer Danny Wisentowski asked Jason to describe his impressions of paddling across the state.
It was both at the same time far more miserable and far more enjoyable than I expected. It sort of hit both extremes. We got stuck in a fog and had to pull over and sleep in a place where we didn't have our gear with us. And we were sleeping on rocks and getting bit up by mosquitoes. And, you know, all you want is just a couple hours of really good sleep. And we did not get it. And after that, I was just pretty out of it. And it's like 3-4 in the morning. But, you know, the sun comes up, you get a second wind, and all of a sudden, you know, you feel great. And so, you know, you really see both extremes, I feel like. And the nice thing about having a partner is that, you know, at least for us, the low points came at different times. Fortunately, you know, if you're just by yourself, you know, 100% of the boat's in pretty bad shape. But if you got somebody else, you know, it's only half of the boat's in bad shape.
So, Nick, you're laughing as you listen to that. So do you agree with Jason on that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was, we both had our down. I was in the middle of telling him a story over my shoulder, and I just stopped in mid-sentence and I realized I need to get in the shade right now. I said, we need to get to the side, Jason. I could barely talk. My heart rate was up and I just got dizzy. And I was like, I'm getting heat exhaustion. We got to stop. And we did. We got over to the side And then there's these Asian carp, riffling the surface. And I'm like, oh, God, please don't jump in the boat.
Yeah, because you had a bad experience with the carp in your training, right?
Yeah, it hit me in the face.
I've heard that they do this, but I've never met someone who's actually been hit by a carp.
Yeah, right in the, it just bounced on my cheek.
And those are big.
They're
right?
Huge.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
Like, yeah, and then once they're in there, your boat, like, you got to deal with it.
Yeah.
But I think there were a few boaters, and there was a few racers this year who I think they got carp in their boat.
Woof. Yeah. Steve, Jason described a combination of joy and misery. So is that similar to what you have heard from other paddlers?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's part of the thing, you know, and people talk about, it's an obvious physical challenge, you know. To finish this race is a huge physical accomplishment, that you can get all the parts of your body to cooperate enough to get you 340 miles down the Missouri River across the state of Missouri. That is a big deal. But what everyone talks about that they have to go through to get to that finish line, usually it's a mental and a spiritual challenge that they have to go through several times in the days that it takes them to cross the state. Your body does its thing, and then your mind kind of follows as well. And you somehow have to move past those difficult times that both Jason and Nick have talked about, you know. And it happens, you know, you can move through it. You move through it, you just keep paddling, or you take the break that you need to take. And you've got the voices in your head telling you, okay, let's go. We're going to do this. We're going to finish this thing.
And Nick, you wrote in your piece that as you were getting into your kayak, the founder of Big Muddy Adventures, I believe, told you you're going to love the hallucinations. They're the best,
yeah.
Which really felt like a Chekhov's gun of paddling. So did you find out if he was right? Tell me about hallucinations on this trip.
Big Muddy and Mike Clark is never wrong, first of all. But secondly, yes, what I wasn't prepared for was just how intense they could be. Now, everyone talks about the illustration in the
yeah,
magazine story I did. It was
very all, trippy, very,
very
colorful.
Very trippy, colorful,
yes.
Sunshine Daydream. It was more just, you're looking at the trees. A lot of it has to do with the trees. You're looking at the trees and they're moving and they're shifting and they look like.
In the dark?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because that's, especially like, you know, 3, 4 in the morning, you've been up.
Yeah.
And almost 24 hours at that point, if you got up early that morning. And you're looking at the trees, and there's also like you see boats that aren't really there.
Ooh.
And your brain is just playing tricks on you, and it gets weird.
Yeah. What else was it like being in the river? Like, I have made that drive many times on Highway 70, but what was your impression of going across the state that way?
Good question. I was really, I'll be super honest, like the western half of the state is fine. I think it gets the landscape, the riverscape gets really interesting once you get past Jeff City and you start seeing these big
bluffs. Yeah.
That was really beautiful. And at one point we saw this moon just like, it was as though like we were in a movie and it just like rose up right in front of us and we were like, oh my God. but it's flat, you know, it's not, you know, this isn't Colorado. This is, you know, we're in the floodplain, you know, we're in a river valley. So, there's beautiful things you can see out there.
Yeah. And Steve, I also wonder about the Missouri River. It's a river that has been really controlled by people. So could you tell me a little bit about what you see in that way as you're going down the Missouri River?
Yeah, sure. It's something that when you're doing the race that you pick up on really quickly. And, you know, we definitely try to educate people before the race about it. But, you know, the Missouri River naturally was about 3 times wider than it is now. So over the past 100 years, the Army Corps of Engineers has channelized the river. So they've narrowed it to make it deeper and faster for barge traffic in particular, but also so that the river will just stay in one place. Naturally, a couple hundred years ago, every flood would cause the river to shift and move around. You know, it was very unreliable, but also kind of, you know, fascinating and interesting and amazing. So the way that the river is now channelized is through rock structures called wing dikes and revetment. So revetment is rocks that are parallel to the current of the river. And they're essentially like holding the bank together. And then you have wing dikes that stick out into the current and they're directing that current flow. So, you know, you quickly begin to understand that those structures are creating a sort of faster slip of water, which is the actual channel that that's where you want to be. If you're paddling across the state, you know, you want to be wherever the water's kind of moving the fastest. So you start to really key on those engineering structures that are directing that current and using them to your advantage in finding that faster water.
And this year, the MR340 attracted 343 boats, 542 paddlers from 36 states. Nick, you and your partner finished the race in just under 74 hours, which was slow compared to a lot of the boaters.
Thanks a lot, Kate.
Yeah, it's just true, right?
It is true.
So as you were approaching the finish line in St. Charles, how did you feel?
Delirious. Happy. I think we were probably annoyed with each other at that point. But it was just, we just wanted to finish. And like, it's, you just want to finish. You just want to finish. And then when you finally get to that, I don't want to step in your next question. I don't know what you got going. But when you get to that finish line, you're just like, you kind of can't accept that it's over because you've been in like go, go, go mode. And you're just like, no, there's got to be more. There's I can't relax yet. So it was just this weird kind of mind game.
Kind of anticlimactic a little
bit?
Yeah. And Steve, what about you when you're at the end of the race? How do you feel as you're watching people come in?
Well, it is really emotional, you know, and Nick kind of alluded to that, you know, when he went to the finish line the year before he did the race, because you do have hundreds of people that are all accomplishing the same amazing thing, but in their own story and their own, obstacles that they needed to get past to get to that finish line. And when you're there and you sort of see person after person coming in and their ground crews, their family and their friends are there helping them out of the boat, it is like wave after wave of emotion that is somehow, you know, bigger and deeper than that individual moment.
Yeah, that is so beautiful, Steve. And we have to wrap it up. So Steve Schnarr is the race director of the MR340 at the nonprofit River Relief, and Nick Phillips is senior editor with St. Louis Magazine. His account of competing in the MR340 is at St. Louis's September issue. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.